hearing the numbness in his own voice. He desperately wanted sleep. Only horrible, and not quite so horrible. He got up to join the other two gladers, fingering the note in his pocket. What could it possibly say, he wondered as he walked out. And how would he ever know when the right time to open it had come? Chapter 23. Thomas hadn't had much time to think about what the world outside of Wicked's control would be like. But now that they were actually going to face it, his nerves lit up with anticipation, and butterflies filled his stomach. He was about to enter uncharted territory. "You guys ready for this?" Brenda asked. They stood outside the burg, at the foot of the cargo door ramp, just 100 feet or so in front of a cement wall with big iron doors. Jorge let out a snort. "I forgot what an inviting place they have here." "You sure you know what you're doing?" Thomas asked him.
"Just keep your mouth shut, hermano, and leave things to me. We're using our real first names with fake last names. All they really care about in the end is that we're immune. They love putting us on record. We don't have more than a day or two before they hunt us down to do something for the government. We're valuable, and I can't stress it enough. Thomas, you need to keep that yapper of yours closed."
"You too, Minho," Brenda added. "Got it? Jorge created fake documents for all of us, and he lies like a master thief."
"No kidding," Minho muttered.
Jorge and Brenda headed toward the doors with Minho close behind. Thomas hesitated. He looked up at the wall. It reminded him of the maze, and a quick flash of the horrible memories of that place went through his mind, particularly the night when he'd tied Albi in the thick ivy and hidden from the Grievers. He was thankful that these walls were bare. The walk to the exit seemed to take forever, the huge wall and doors growing taller and taller as the group approached them. When they finally made it to the foot of the immense doors, an electronic buzzer sounded from somewhere, followed by a female voice.
"State your names and your business."
Jorge answered very loudly.
"I'm Jorge Galarga, and these are my associates, Brenda de Spain, Thomas Murphy, and Minho Park. We're here for some information gathering and field testing. I'm a certified Berg pilot. I have all the necessary paperwork with me, but you can check it out."
He pulled a few data cards from his back pocket and held them up to a camera in the wall.
"Hold, please,"
the voice directed. Thomas was sweating. He was sure the lady would sound an alarm any second now. Guards would come rushing out. They'd send him back to Wicked, to the White Room, or worse. He waited, mind racing, for what felt like several minutes before a series of clicks rattled the air, followed by a loud thunk. Then one of the iron doors swung outward, its hinges squealing. Thomas peered through the widening crack and was relieved to see that the narrow alley on the other side was empty. At the end stood another huge wall with another set of doors. Those doors looked more modern, though, and several screens and panels were set into the cement to their right.
"Come on," Jorge said.
He walked through the open door as if he did it every day. Thomas, Minho, and Brenda followed Jorge down the alley to the outer wall, where he stopped. The screens and panels Thomas had seen from the other side were complex up close. Jorge pressed a button on the largest and began to enter their fake names and identification numbers. He typed in a few other pieces of information, then fed their data cards into a large slot. The group waited quietly as a few minutes passed, Thomas's anxiety growing with every second. He tried not to show it, but he suddenly felt like this had been a huge mistake. They should have gone somewhere else less secure, or tried to break into the city somehow. These people were going to see right through them. Maybe Wicked had already sent out calls to be on the lookout for fugitives. "Slim it, Thomas," he told himself, and for half a second he worried he'd said it out loud. The lady's voice came back.
"Papers are in order. Please move to the viral testing station."
Jorge stepped to the right, and a panel on the wall opened. Thomas watched as a mechanical arm came out of it. It was a strange device with what looked like eye sockets. Jorge leaned forward and pressed his face to the machine. As soon as his eyes were lined up to the sockets, a small wire snaked out and pricked his neck. There were several hisses and clicks, then the wire retracted back into the device, and Jorge stepped away. The entire panel rotated back into the wall, and the device Jorge had used disappeared, replaced by a new one that looked just like it. "Next," the lady announced. Brenda exchanged an uneasy glance with Thomas, then stepped up to the machine and leaned into it. The wire pricked her neck, the device hissed and clicked, and it was over. She moved away, taking a very noticeable breath of relief.
"It's been a long time since I've used one of those," she whispered to Thomas. "They make me nervous, like I'm suddenly not going to be immune anymore."
Once again, the lady said, "Next." Minho went through the procedure. Finally, it was Thomas's turn. He walked over to the testing panel as it rotated again, and as soon as the new apparatus appeared and locked into place, he leaned forward and placed his eyes where they were supposed to go. He braced himself for the pain of the wire, but he hardly noticed the prick on his neck before it was gone. All he saw inside the machine were a few flashes of light and color. He felt a puff of air that made him squeeze his eyes shut. When he opened them again, everything was dark. After a few seconds, he stepped back and waited for whatever was supposed to happen next. The lady finally spoke again.
"You've all been cleared of VCT and confirmed immune. You do realize that the opportunities for your kind are vast here in Denver, but don't advertise it too much out on the streets. Everyone here is healthy and virus-free, but there are many who still don't take kindly to immunes.
We're here for a few simple tasks and then we'll be heading out again, probably in a week or so," Jorge said. "Hopefully we can keep our little secret a secret."
"What's VCT?" Thomas whispered to Minho. "You think I know?" "Viral contagion threat," Brenda answered before Thomas could ask her. "But keep it down. Anyone who doesn't know that will seem suspicious here."
Thomas opened his mouth to say something, but was startled by a loud beep as the doors began to slide open. Another hallway was revealed, its walls made of metal. There was another set of closed doors at the end of it. Thomas wondered just how long this would go on.
"Enter the detector one at a time, please," the woman directed.
Her voice seemed to follow them to this third hallway.
"Mr. Galarga first."
Jorge entered the small space, and the doors slid shut behind him.
"What's the detector?" Thomas asked.
"It detects stuff,"
Brenda replied curtly. Thomas wrinkled his face at her. Faster than he expected, an alarm buzzed again, and the doors opened. Jorge was no longer there.
"Ms. Despain is next,"
their now bored-sounding announcer said. Brenda nodded at Thomas and entered the detector. A minute or so later, and it was Minho's turn. Minho looked at Thomas, a serious expression on his face.
"If I don't see you on the other side," he said in a sappy voice, "remember that I love you."
Snickering at Thomas's eye roll, he went through the doors and they closed. Soon the lady called for Thomas to enter. He stepped inside and the doors closed behind him. A rush of air hit him as several low beeps sounded. Then the doors in front of him slid open and there were people everywhere. His heartbeat picked up, but he spotted his waiting friends and relaxed. He was struck by all the activity around him as he joined them. A bustling crowd of men and women, many of whom clutched rags to their mouths, filled a huge atrium topped with a glass ceiling far above, letting in loads of sunshine. Through one corner he could see the tops of several skyscrapers, though these looked nothing like the ones they'd come across in the Scorch. They were brilliant in the sunlight. Thomas was so stunned by everything there was to look at, he almost forgot how nervous he'd been only a moment before.
"Wasn't so bad, was it, muchacho?"
Jorge asked.
"I kinda liked it," Minho said.
Thomas was utterly wowed. He couldn't stop craning his neck to take in the large building they'd entered.
"What is this place?"
he finally got out.
"Who are all these people?"
He looked to his three partners, waiting for an answer. Jorge and Brenda looked embarrassed to be with him. But Brenda's expression changed abruptly, melting into something like sadness.
"I keep forgetting that you've lost your memories," she murmured,
then opened her arms to gesture around herself.
"It's called a mall. Basically, it runs along the entire wall surrounding the city. It's mainly shops and businesses."
"I've just never seen so many." His voice trailed off, A man in a dark blue jacket was approaching them, his gaze set on Thomas, and he didn't look very happy.
"Hey,"
Thomas whispered, nodding toward the stranger. The man reached them before anyone could respond. He gave the group a curt nod and announced,
"We know some people escaped from Wicked, and judging by the burg you came in, I'm guessing you're part of that group. I highly recommend you accept the advice I'm about to give you. You have nothing to be afraid of. We're only asking for help, and you'll be protected when you arrive."
He handed Thomas a slip of paper, spun on his heel, and walked off without another word.
"What in the world was that all about?" Minho asked. "What does it say?"
Thomas looked down and read it.
"It says, you need to come meet me immediately. I'm with a group called the Right Arm, corner of Kenwood and Brookshire, apartment 2792.
A lump formed in Thomas's throat when he saw the signature at the bottom of the slip of paper. He looked up at Minho, sure his face had gone pale.
"It's from Galley."
Chapter 24. It turned out that Thomas didn't need to do any explaining. Brenda and Jorge had started working for Wicked in plenty of time to know who Galley was, how he'd been an outcast of sorts in the Glade, how he and Thomas had become bitter rivals because of Galley's memories from the Changing. But all Thomas could think of was the angry boy throwing the knife that killed Chuck, that made the boy bleed to death on the ground as Thomas held him. Then he had lost it, had beaten Galley until he thought he'd killed him. A surprising amount of relief filled him when he realized that maybe he hadn't, if this note was really from Galley. As much as he'd hated the guy, Thomas didn't want to be a murderer.
"It can't possibly be him," Brenda said.
"Why not?" Thomas asked. The relief began to wash away.
"What happened to him after we were taken away? Did he die?"
"No. He spent a week or so in the infirmary, recovering from a broken cheekbone. But that was nothing compared to the psychological damage. They used him to kill Chuck because the psychs thought the patterns would be valuable. It was all planned. They forced Chuck to move in front of you." Any anger Thomas had felt toward Galley shifted to Wicked, feeding his ever-growing hatred for the organization. The guy had been a complete slinthead, but if what Brenda said was true, he was only Wicked's instrument. It made Thomas even angrier at them to hear that it wasn't a mistake that Chuck had been killed instead of him. Brenda continued,
"I heard that one of the psychs designed the interaction to be a variable not just for you and the Gladers who witnessed it, but also for Chuck during his last few moments."
For one short but frightening instant, Thomas thought rage would overcome him, that he'd grab some random stranger from the crowd and beat the clunk out of him like he'd beaten Galley. He sucked in a breath and ran a shaking hand through his hair.
"Nothing surprises me anymore," he forced out through clenched teeth.
"Galley's mind couldn't handle what he'd done," Brenda said. "He went completely nuts, and they had to send him away. I'm sure they figured no one would ever believe his story."
"So, why do you think this can't be him?" Thomas asked.
"Maybe he got better, found his way here." Brenda shook her head.
"Look, anything's possible. But I saw the guy. It was like he had the flair. He was trying to eat chairs and spitting and yelling and ripping his own hair out."
"I saw him too," Jorge said. "He got past the guards one day. He ran through the halls naked, screaming at the top of his lungs about beetles in his veins."
Thomas tried to clear his mind.
"I wonder what he means by the right arm."
Jorge answered,
"There are rumors about them all over the place. It's supposed to be an underground group bent on taking down Wicked."
"Even more reason to do what the note says," Thomas said.
Brenda's face showed doubt.
"I really think we should find Hans before anything else."
Thomas held up the piece of paper and shook it.
"We're going to see Galley. We need someone who knows the city."
More than that, though, his gut told him that it was where they should start.
"What if this is some kind of trap?"
"Yeah," Minho said. "Maybe we should think about this."
"No."
Thomas shook his head.
"We can't try to outguess them anymore.
Sometimes they do things just to make me do the opposite of what they think I think they think I want to do."
"Huh?" The three of them asked at the same time, confusion transforming their faces. "From now on, I do what feels right," Thomas explained. "And something tells me we need to go to this place and see Galley, at least to find out if it's really him. He's a connection to the Glade, and he has every reason in the world to be on our side." The others stared at him with blank faces, as if they were trying to come up with further arguments.
"Good that," Thomas said. "I'll take all those looks as yeses. I'm glad to see you all agree with me. Now, how are we going to get there?"
Brenda let out an exaggerated sigh.
"Ever heard of a cab?"
After a quick meal in the mall, they caught a cab to drive them into the city. When Jorge handed the driver a card to pay with, Thomas worried again about Wicked tracking them. As soon as they got settled in their seats, he asked Jorge about it in a whisper so the driver couldn't hear. Jorge only gave him a troubled look.
"You're worried because Galley knew we were coming, right?"
Thomas guessed. Jorge nodded.
"A little. But the way that man introduced himself, I'm just hoping that word of an escape leaked out and this right-arm group's been looking for us since. I've heard they're based here."
"Or maybe it has something to do with Teresa's group coming here first," Brenda offered.
Thomas didn't feel very comforted.
"You sure you know what you're doing?" he asked Jorge.
"We'll be fine, muchacho. Now that we're here, Wicked will have a hell of a time catching up to us. It's easier than you think to blend in a city. Just relax."
Thomas didn't know if there was much chance of that, but he did lean back in his seat to look out the window. The ride through Denver completely took his breath away. He remembered the hovering vehicles from his childhood, unmanned, weaponized police vehicles everyone had called cop machines. But so much was like nothing he'd ever seen before. The huge skyscrapers, the brilliant displays of holographic advertising, the countless people. He really had a hard time believing it was real. Some small part of him wondered if his optic nerves were being manipulated by Wicked somehow, if it was all yet another simulation. He wondered if he'd lived in a city like this before, and if he had, how he could possibly have forgotten the splendor of it all. As they drove through the crowded streets, it occurred to him that maybe the world wasn't so bad off after all. Here was an entire community, thousands of people going about their everyday lives. But the drive continued, and gradually details he hadn't noticed began to come into focus. And the longer they drove, the more unsettled Thomas grew. Almost everyone he saw looked uneasy. They all seemed to be avoiding each other, and not just to be polite. They seemed to take obvious measures to stay clear of anyone else. Just like back at the mall, many of them wore masks or held rags that covered their mouth and nose as they walked. Posters and signs littered the walls of the buildings, most torn or obscured with spray paint. Some warned of the flare and spelled out precautions. Others talked about the dangers of leaving the cities or what to do if you came across an infected person. A few had terrifying pictures of cranks way past the gone. Thomas spotted one poster with a close-up of a tight-faced woman with her hair pulled back, with the slogan, "Chancellor Page loves you," across the bottom.
Chancellor Page.
Thomas immediately recognized the name. She was the one Brenda had said they could trust, the only one. He turned to ask Brenda about it, but paused. Something told him to wait until they were alone. As they drove, he noticed posters showing her likeness, but most of them were covered with graffiti. It was hard to tell what the woman really looked like beneath the devil horns and silly mustaches. Some type of security force patrolled every street in great numbers. There were hundreds of them, all wearing red shirts and gas masks, a weapon in one hand, and in the other, a smaller version of the viral testing device Thomas and his friends had looked into before entering the city. The farther they got from the outside barrier wall, the dirtier the streets became. Trash was everywhere. Windows were broken and graffiti decorated almost every wall. And despite the sun glinting off windows high above, a darkness had settled over the place. The cab turned into an alley, and Thomas was surprised to see that it was deserted. The cab pulled up and stopped at a cement building that rose at least 20 stories high, and the driver popped Jorge's card out of the slot and handed it back to him, which Thomas took as his sign to exit the car. Once they were all out and the cab had driven away, Jorge pointed to the closest staircase.
"Number 2792 is right there, on the second floor."
Minho whistled, then said,
"Looks really homey."
Thomas agreed. The place was far from inviting, and the drab gray bricks covered in graffiti made him nervous. He didn't want to walk up those steps and find out who was waiting inside. Brenda gave him a push from behind.
"Your idea. You lead."
He swallowed hard but didn't say anything, just walked over to the stairs and slowly climbed them, the other three falling in behind. The cracked and warped wooden door of apartment 2792 looked like it had been put there 1,000 years ago, only a few scant remnants of faded green paint remaining.
"This is crazy," Jorge whispered. "This is completely crazy."
Minho snorted.
"Thomas kicked the clunk out of him once. He can do it again. Unless he comes out with guns blazing,"
Jorge countered.
"Would you guys shut up?" Thomas said.
His nerves were shot. Without another word, he reached out and knocked on the door. A few agonizing seconds later, it opened. Thomas could tell immediately that the black-haired kid who answered was Galley from the Glade. No doubt about it. But his face was badly scarred, covered in raised lines like thin white slugs. His right eye looked permanently swollen, and his nose, which had been big and slightly deformed before the Chuck incident, was markedly crooked.
"Glad you came," Galley said in his raspy voice, "because the end of the world is upon us."
Chapter 25. Galley stepped back and opened the door wider.
"Come in."
Thomas felt a rush of guilt at seeing what he'd done to Galley. He had no idea how to act or what to say. He just nodded and forced himself to enter the apartment. It was a dark but tidy room with no furniture, and it smelled like bacon. A yellow blanket had been hung over the large window, giving the place an eerie glow.
"Have a seat," Galley said.
All Thomas could think of was finding out how the right arm had known he was in Denver and what they wanted, but instinct told him he had to play by their rules before he could get answers. They sat down on the bare floor, he and his friends in a line, with Galley facing them like a judge. Galley's face looked awful in the dim light, and his swollen right eye was bloodshot.
"You know, Minho," Thomas said awkwardly.
Minho and Galley gave each other a curt nod.
"This is Brenda and Jorge. They're from Wicked, but
I know who they are,"
Galley interrupted. He didn't sound mad, just kind of numb.
"Those shucks at Wicked gave me my past back. Without asking, I might add."
His gaze focused on Minho.
"Hey, you were real nice to me in our last gathering. Thanks for that."
The sarcasm was thick. Thomas shrank at the memory, Minho throwing Galley to the floor, threatening him. He'd forgotten about it.
"I'd had a bad day,"
Minho responded, his expression making it impossible to tell if he was serious or even the tiniest bit sorry.
"Yeah, well,"
Galley said.
"Let bygones be bygones, right?"
His snicker made it clear he meant anything but. Minho might not have had regrets, but Thomas did.
"I'm sorry about what I did, Galley."
He held the other boy's gaze with his own as he said it. He wanted Galley to believe him, to know that he understood that Wicked was their shared enemy.
"You're sorry? I killed Chuck. He's dead, because of me."
Hearing him say that brought Thomas no relief, only sadness.
"It wasn't your fault," Brenda said, her tone soothing.
"That's a bunch of clunk," Galley said stiffly. "If I had any kind of guts, I could have stopped them from controlling me. But I let them do it to me because I thought I'd be killing Thomas, not Chuck. Not in a million years would I have let myself murder that poor kid."
"How generous of you," Minho said.
"So you wanted me dead?" Thomas asked, surprised at the boy's honesty. Galley scoffed.
"Don't get all whiny on me. I hated you more than I'd ever hated anybody in my life, but what happened in the past doesn't matter one lick anymore. We need to talk about the future, about the end of the world."
"Wait a second there, muchacho," Jorge said. "First off, you're going to tell us every little thing that's happened since you got shipped out of Wicked till you ended up sitting right where you're sitting."
"I want to know how you knew we were coming,"
Minho added.
"And when? And who was that weird dude who delivered the message to us?"
Galley snickered again, which actually made his face look even scarier.
"I guess Being with Wicked doesn't exactly fill someone with trust now, does it?
They're right, Thomas said. You've got to tell us what's going on, especially if you want our help.
Your help?
Gally asked. I don't know if I'd put it that way, but I'm sure we have the same goals.
Listen, Thomas said. We need a reason to trust you. Just talk.
After a long pause, Gally began.
The guy who gave you the note is named Richard. He's a member of a group called the Right Arm. They have people in every city and town left on this crappy planet. Their whole mission is to bring down our old friends, to use Wicked's money and influence for things that actually matter. But they don't have the resources to disrupt an organization so huge and powerful. They want to act, but they're still missing some information.
We've heard of them, Brenda said. But how do you get involved?
They have a couple of spies in the main complex at Wicked, and they got to me, explained how if I faked going crazy, I'd be sent away. And I would have done anything to get out of that place. Anyway, the Right Arm wanted an insider who knew how the building functions, the security systems, that kind of clunk. So they attacked my escort car and took me, brought me here. As for how I knew you were coming, we got an anonymous message over the net block. I assumed you guys sent it.
Thomas looked to Brenda for an explanation, but all he got from her was a shrug.
So it wasn't you, Gally said. Then maybe it was someone at headquarters sending out an alert, trying to set up bounty hunters or whatever. Point is, once we knew about it, from there it was just a matter of hacking into the airport system to see where a Berg had shown up.
And you brought us here to talk about taking down Wicked? Thomas asked. Even the remote possibility of such a thing filled him with hope. Gally nodded slowly and deliberately before he spoke.
You make it sound so easy, but yeah, that's about the gist of it. We've got two big problems on our hands, though.
Brenda was clearly impatient.
What? Just let it out.
Slim it, girl.
What problems?
Thomas pushed. Gally shot Brenda a glare, then looked back at Thomas.
First of all, word is that the flare is running rampant through this whole shuck city, and that all kinds of corruption is going on to hide it because the ones who are sick are government bigwigs. They're hiding the virus with the bliss. It slows down the flare so people who have it can blend in with everyone else. But the virus keeps spreading. My guess is it's the same all over the world. There's just no way to keep that beast out.
Thomas felt a fear in his gut. The idea of a world overwhelmed by hordes of cranks was terrifying. He couldn't imagine how truly awful things could get. Being immune wouldn't amount to much when that happened.
What's the other problem? Minho asked. As if that one wasn't bad enough. People like us.
People like us?
Brenda repeated, a confused look on her face.
You mean immunes?
Yeah.
Gally leaned forward.
They're disappearing. Being kidnapped or running away, vanishing into thin air. No one knows. A little birdie told me that they're being gathered and sold to Wicked so they can continue the trials. Start all over if they have to. Whether that's true or not, the population of immune people in this city and others has been halved in the last 6 months, and most of them are disappearing without a trace. It's causing a lot of headaches. The city needs them more than the people even realize.
Thomas's anxiety went up a notch. Don't most people hate the Munis? Isn't that what they call us? Maybe they're being killed or something. He hated the other possibility that was occurring to him, that Wicked might be kidnapping them and putting them through exactly what he'd been through.
I doubt that, Gally said. My little birdie is a reliable source, and this reeks of Wicked to the core. These problems make a bad combination. The flare is all over the city, even though the government claims it's not, and the immunes are disappearing. Whatever's happening, there isn't going to be anyone left in Denver. Who knows about other cities?
So what does this have to do with us?
Jorge asked. Gally looked surprised.
What, you don't care that civilization is about to come to an end? The cities are crumbling. Pretty soon it's just going to be a world of psychos who want to eat you for supper.
Of course we care, Thomas answered. But what do you want us to do about it?
Hey, all I know is that Wicked has one directive, to find a cure. And it's pretty obvious that's never going to happen. If we had their money, their resources, we could use it to really help, to protect the healthy. I thought you'd want that.
Thomas did, of course.
desperately. Galley shrugged when no one responded.
We don't have much to lose. We might as well try something.
Galley, Thomas said, do you know anything about Teresa and a bunch of other people who also escaped today? Galley nodded.
Yeah, we found them too. Gave them the same message I'm giving you. Who did you think my little birdie was?
Teresa, Thomas whispered. A flash of hope sparked within him. She must have remembered all that stuff about Wicked when they'd removed the swipe. Could the operation have made her change her tune? Was her insistence that Wicked is good finally a thing of the past?
That's right. She said she couldn't agree with them starting the cycle all over again. Said something about hoping to find you, too. But there's one more thing.
Thomas groaned.
That doesn't sound so good.
Galley shrugged.
Never does these days. One of our people out looking for your group came across a strange rumor. Said it was somehow related to all these people escaping from Wicked headquarters. I'm not sure if they could track you or not, but it looks like they probably could have guessed you'd come to Denver anyway.
Why? Thomas asked. What's the rumor?
There's a huge bounty out for a guy named Hans, who used to work there, lives here now. Wicked thinks you came here for him, and they want him dead.
Chapter 26.
Brenda stood up.
We're leaving. Now. Come on.
Jorge and Minho got to their feet, and as Thomas joined them, he knew Brenda had been right earlier. Finding Hans had to be priority one now. He had to get the tracking device out of his head, and if they were after Hans, they had to get to him first.
Galley, do you swear everything you told us is true?
Every bit.
The glader hadn't moved from his position on the floor.
The right arm wants to take action. They're planning something even as we speak. They need information about Wicked, though, and who better to help us than you? If we can get Teresa and the others, too, that'd be even better. We need every warm body we can get.
Thomas decided to trust Galley. Maybe they'd never liked each other, but they had the same enemy, which put them on the same team.
What do we do if we want in? He finally asked.
Do we come back here? Go somewhere else? Galley smiled.
Come back here. Any time after 9 or so in the morning for another week, I should be around. I don't think we'll make any moves before then.
Moves? Thomas was itching with curiosity.
I've told you enough. You want more? You come back. I'll be here.
Thomas nodded, then held out a hand. Galley shook it.
I don't blame you for anything, Thomas said. You saw what I'd done for Wicked when you went through the changing. I wouldn't have trusted me either. And I know you didn't want to kill Chuck. Just don't plan on hugs every time I see you.
The feeling's mutual.
Brenda was already at the door waiting for him when he turned to go. Before Thomas left, though, Galley squeezed his elbow.
Time's running out, but we can do something.
We'll be back, Thomas said, then followed his friends. Fear of the unknown no longer controlled him. Hope had found its way in and taken hold. They didn't find Hans until the next day. Jorge got them into a cheap motel after they'd purchased some clothes and food, and Thomas and Minho used the room's computer to search the net block, while Jorge and Brenda made dozens of calls to people Thomas had never heard of. After hours of work, they finally found an address through someone Jorge called a friend of a friend of an enemy's enemy. By that time, it was late, and they all crashed for the night. Thomas and Minho were stuck sleeping on the floor, while the other two got the twin beds. The next morning, they showered, ate, and put on their new clothes. Then they got a cab and went straight to the place they'd been told Hans lived, an apartment building in only slightly better shape than Galley's. They climbed to the fourth floor and knocked on a gray metal door. The lady who answered kept saying she'd never heard of anyone named Hans, but Jorge kept pushing. Then a gray-haired man with a wide jaw peeked over the woman's shoulder.
Let them in, he said in a gravelly voice.
A minute or so later, Thomas and his three friends were sitting around a rickety table in the kitchen, all their focus on the gruffly distant man named Hans.
It's good to see you okay, Brenda, he said. You too, Jorge. But I'm not in the mood to catch up. Why don't you just tell me what you want?
I think you know the main reason we're here,
Brenda replied, then nodded toward Thomas and Minho. But we also just heard that Wicked has put a bounty on your head. We need to hurry and do this, and then you need to get out of here. Han seemed to shrug off that last part, looking at his two potential customers.
You've still got the implants, do you?
Thomas nodded, nervous but determined to get this over with.
I only want the controlling device out. I don't want my memories back. And I want to know how this operation works first.
Hans wrinkled his face in disgust.
What kind of nonsense is this? Who's this weak-kneed coward you brought to my place, Brenda?
I'm not a coward, Thomas said before she could respond. I've just had too many people in my head. Hans threw up his hands, then slapped the table.
Who said I'd do anything to your head? Who said I liked you enough for that?
Are there any nice people in Denver?
Minho muttered.
You folks are about 3 seconds from being thrown out of my apartment.
Everyone just shut up for a second,
Brenda shouted. She leaned toward Hans and spoke in a quieter voice.
Listen, this is important. Thomas is important, and Wicked will do just about anything to get their hands on him. We can't risk them getting close enough to start controlling him or Minho.
Hans glared at Thomas, scrutinized him like a scientist examining a specimen.
Doesn't look important to me.
He shook his head and stood up.
Give me 5 minutes to prep, he said,
then disappeared through a side door without further explanation. Thomas could only wonder if the man recognized him, if he knew what Thomas had done for Wicked before the maze. Brenda sat back in her chair and let out a sigh.
That wasn't so bad.
Yeah, Thomas thought.
The bad part's coming up.
He was relieved that Hans was going to help them, but as he looked around, he got more and more nervous. He was about to let a stranger mess with his brain in a dirty old apartment. Minho snickered.
You look scared, Tommy.
Don't forget, muchacho, Jorge said. You're doing this too. That gray-haired grandpa said 5 minutes, so get ready.
The sooner the better, Minho replied.
Thomas rested his elbows on the table, his head, which had begun to throb, in his hands.
Thomas, Brenda whispered, you okay?
He looked up.
I just need to...
The words caught in his throat as a sharp pain sliced down his spine, but just as quickly as it had come, it was gone. He sat up in the chair, startled. Then a spasm sent his arms out straight, and his legs kicked, twisting his body so that he slid off the chair and collapsed to the floor, shaking. He yelled when his back slammed into the hard tile and struggled to get control of his jerking limbs, but he couldn't. His feet slapped the floor. His shins banged against the legs of the table.
Thomas! Brenda yelled. What's wrong?
Despite his loss of bodily control, Thomas's mind was clear. He could see out of the corner of his eye that Minho was next to him on the ground, trying to calm him, and Jorge was frozen in place, eyes wide. Thomas tried to speak, but only drool came out of his mouth.
Can you hear me? Brenda yelled, bending over him. Thomas, what's wrong?
Then his limbs abruptly stilled, legs straightening and coming to a rest, his arms falling limp at his sides. He couldn't make them move. He strained with the effort, but nothing happened. He tried to speak again, but no words formed. Brenda's expression changed to something close to horror.
Thomas?
He didn't know how, but his body started moving, even though he wasn't telling it to. His arms and legs shifted. He was getting to his feet. It was as if he'd become a puppet. He tried to scream, but couldn't.
You okay?
Minho asked. Panic clenched inside Thomas as he kept doing things against his will. His head twitched, then turned toward the door through which their host had disappeared. Words started spilling from his mouth, but he had no idea where they came from.
I can't let you do this.
Chapter 27. Thomas fought desperately against it, straining to get control of his muscles, but something foreign had taken over his body.
Thomas, they've got you, Brenda yelled. Fight it!
He watched helplessly as his own hand pushed her face away, sent her tumbling to the floor. Jorge moved to protect her, but Thomas reached out and punched him in the chin with a quick jab. Jorge's head snapped back. A little spray of blood shot from his lip. Again, the words were forced from Thomas's mouth.
I can't let you do this!
By that time, he was screaming, the effort hurting his throat. It was like his brain had been programmed with that one sentence, and he couldn't say anything else. Brenda had gotten back to her feet. Minho stood dazed, his face a mask of confusion. Jorge was wiping the blood off his chin, his eyes lit with anger. And a memory bubbled up in Thomas. Something about a failsafe programmed into his implant to prevent it from being removed. He wanted to shout at his friends, tell them to sedate him, but he couldn't. He started moving toward the door in lurching steps, shoving Minho out of the way. As he half stumbled past the kitchen counter, his hand reached out and grabbed a knife sitting by the sink. He gripped the handle, and the harder he tried to drop it, the more tightly his fingers clenched.
Thomas!
Minho shouted, finally breaking out of his stupor.
Fight it, man! Get those shuck people out of your head!
Thomas turned to face him, held the knife up. He hated himself for being so weak, for not being able to master his own body. Once again he tried to speak, but nothing. All his body would do now was whatever it took to prevent his implant from being removed.
You gonna kill me, Slinthead?
Minho asked.
Gonna throw that thing just like Gally did to Chuck? Do it then. Throw it.
For 1 second, Thomas was terrified that that was exactly what he'd do. But instead, his body turned back around to face the opposite direction. Just as he did, Hans came through the doorway, and his eyes widened. Thomas guessed Hans was his main target, that the failsafe would attack whoever was attempting to remove his implant.
What the hell is this?
Hans asked.
I can't let you do this, Thomas replied.
I was worried about this, Hans murmured.
He turned to the group.
You guys get over here and help.
Thomas pictured the internal workings of the mechanism in his brain as minuscule instruments operated by minuscule spiders. He fought them, clenched his teeth, but his arm started to rise, the knife gripped tightly in his balled fist.
I can't...
Before he could finish, someone slammed into him from behind, knocking the knife from his hand. He crashed to the floor and twisted to see Minho.
I'm not letting you kill anybody, his friend said. Get off me!
Thomas yelled, not sure if they were his own words or Wicked's. But Minho had pinned Thomas's arms to the ground. He hovered over him, heaving to catch his breath.
I'm not getting up until they let your mind go.
Thomas wanted to smile, but his face couldn't follow even a simple command. He felt the tension in every single muscle.
It won't stop until Hans fixes him, Brenda said.
Hans? The older man knelt down next to Thomas and Minho.
I can't believe I ever worked for those people. For you.
He almost spat the word, looking directly at Thomas. Thomas watched all this, powerless. His insides boiled with the desire to relax, to help Hans do what he needed to do. Then something ignited inside him, making his midsection arch upward. His body bucked and fought to free his arms. Minho pressed down, tried to get his legs in position to sit on Thomas's back. But whatever was controlling Thomas seemed to release adrenaline inside him. His strength overcame Minho's, and he threw the boy off. Thomas was on his feet in an instant. He grabbed the knife off the floor and dove toward Hans, lashing out with the blade. The man deflected it with his forearm, a red gash appearing there as the two of them collided and rolled across the floor, struggling against each other. Thomas did everything he could to stop himself, but the knife kept slashing as Hans kept dodging it.
Get him!
Brenda yelled from somewhere close. Thomas saw hands appear, felt them grabbing his arms. Somebody gripped him by the hair and yanked back. Thomas screamed in agony, then slashed blindly with the knife. Relief flooded through him. Jorge and Minho were gaining control, pulling him off Hans. Thomas crashed onto his back, and the knife was knocked from his grip. He heard it clatter across the floor as someone kicked it to the far side of the kitchen.
I can't let you do this!
Thomas yelled. He hated himself, even though he knew he had no control.
Shut up!
Minho shouted back, now in his face as he and Jorge fought against Thomas's attempts to get free.
You're crazy, dude! They're making you crazy!
Thomas desperately wanted to tell Minho that he was right.
Thomas didn't really believe what he was saying. Minho turned and yelled at Hans, "Let's get that thing out of his head!"
"No!"
Thomas shouted.
"No!"
He twisted and flailed his arms, battled them with ferocious strength, but the four of them proved too much. Somehow they ended up with one person holding tightly to each of his limbs. They lifted him from the floor, carried him out of the kitchen into a short hallway, and down its length as he kicked and squirmed, knocking several framed pictures off the walls. The sound of shattering glass followed them. Thomas screamed once, then again, over and over. He had no more strength to resist the internal forces. His body fought against Minho and the others. He said whatever Wicked wanted him to. He'd given up.
"In here!"
Hans shouted over him. They entered a small, cramped lab with two instrument-filled tables and a bed. A crude-looking version of the mask they'd seen back at Wicked hung over the empty mattress.
"Get him on the bed!"
Hans yelled. They slammed Thomas down onto his back, where he continued to struggle.
"Get this leg for me! I need to knock him out!"
Minho, who had been holding the other leg, now grabbed both legs and used his body to press them against the bed. Thomas's thoughts immediately went back to when he and Newt had done this same thing to Albie when he'd woken up from the changing back in the Glade homestead. There was the clatter and clanging of Hans going through a drawer, searching for something. Then he was back.
"Hold him as still as possible."
Thomas erupted in one last flurry of effort to get free, screaming at the top of his lungs. An arm sprang loose from Brenda's grip, and he smacked Jorge in the face with his fist.
"Stop it!"
Brenda yelled as she reached for it. Thomas arched his torso again.
"I can't let you do this!"
He had never felt such frustration.
"Hold him still, dammit!"
Hans shouted. Somehow Brenda got his arm again, leaned against it with her upper body. Thomas felt a sharp prick in his leg. It was such an odd thing to be fighting against something so violently, and yet wanting it to happen so completely. When the darkness started to take him, and his body stilled, he finally regained control of himself. At the very last second, he said,
"I hate those shucks."
And then he was out. Chapter 28. Lost in the dark haze of drugs, Thomas dreamed. He is 15 years old, sitting on a bed. The room is dark except for the amber glow of a lamp on the desk. Teresa is there. She has pulled a chair out and is sitting close to him. Her face is haunted, a mask of misery.
"We had to do this," she says quietly.
Thomas is there, but isn't there. He doesn't remember the details of what happened, but he knows his insides feel like rot and filth. He and Teresa have done something horrible, but his dreaming self can't quite grasp what it was. A ghastly thing that is no less repulsive because they were told to do it by the people they did it to.
"We had to do it," she repeats.
"I know,"
Thomas responds, in a voice that sounds as dead as dust. Two words pop into his head. The purge. The wall blocking him from the memory thins for a moment, and a dreadful fact looms on the other side. Teresa starts talking again.
"They wanted it to end this way, Tom. Better to die than spend years going crazier and crazier. They're gone now. We had no choice and no better way to make it happen. It's done and that's that. We need to get the new people trained and keep the trials going. We've come too far to let it fall apart."
For a moment, Thomas hates her, but it's fleeting. He knows she's trying to be strong.
"That doesn't mean I have to like it."
And he doesn't. He has never hated himself with such intensity before. Teresa nods, but says nothing. The dreaming Thomas tries to invade the mind of his younger self, explore the memories in that unfettered space. The original creators, flare-infected, purged, and dead. Countless volunteers to take their place. The two ongoing maze trials, running strong over a year in, with more results every day. The slowly but surely building blueprint. Training for the replacements. It's all there for the taking. For the remembering. But then he changes his mind, turns his back on it all,
The past is the past. There is only the future now. He sinks into a dark oblivion. Thomas woke up groggy, but with a dull ache behind his eyes. The dream still throbbed in his skull like a pulse, though its details had grown fuzzy. He knew enough about the Purge, about its being the shift from the original creators to their replacements. He and Teresa had had to exterminate the entire staff after an outbreak. They'd had no choice, were the only ones left who were immune. He swore to never think about it again. Minho was sitting in a chair nearby, his head lolling as he snored in fitful sleep.
Minho, Thomas whispered. Hey, Minho, wake up.
Huh?
Minho opened his eyes slowly and coughed.
What? What's going on?
Nothing. I just want to know what happened. Did Hans get the thing switched off? Are we fixed? Minho nodded through a big yawn.
Yeah, both of us. At least he said he did. Man, you wigged out big time. You remember all that?
Of course I do. A wave of embarrassment made his face flush hot.
But it was like I was paralyzed or something. I kept trying, but I couldn't stop whatever was controlling me.
Dude, you tried to slice my you-know-what's off.
Thomas laughed, something he hadn't done in a long time. He welcomed it happily.
Too bad I didn't. Could have saved the world from future little Minhos. Just remember you owe me one.
Good that.
He owed them all. Brenda, Jorge, and Hans walked in, all three of them looking serious, and the smile fell from Thomas's face.
Gally stop by and give you guys another pep talk? Thomas asked, forcing a lighthearted tone to his voice.
You look downright depressed.
When did you get so cheerful, muchacho?
Jorge responded.
A few hours ago, you were stabbing at us with a knife.
Thomas opened his mouth to apologize, to explain, but Hans shushed him. He leaned over the bed and flashed a little light into both of Thomas's eyes.
Looks like your head's clearing up pretty well. The pain should be gone soon. Your operation was a little worse because of that failsafe.
Thomas turned his attention to Brenda.
Is it fixed?
It worked, she said. Judging from the fact that you're not trying to kill us anymore, it's deactivated. And what?
Well, you shouldn't be able to talk to or hear from Teresa or Aris again.
Thomas might have felt a pang of sadness at that even the day before, but now he felt only relief.
Suits me fine. Any sign of trouble yet?
She shook her head.
No, but they can't take any chances. Hans and his wife are going to leave, but he wanted to tell you something first.
Hans had stepped back to stand by the wall, probably to give them a little space. He came forward now, his eyes downcast.
I wish I could go with you and help, but I have a wife and she's my family. She's my first concern. I wanted to wish you luck. I hope you can do what I don't have the courage to try.
Thomas nodded. The change in the man's attitude was marked. Maybe the recent incident had reminded him of what Wicked was capable of.
Thanks. And if we can stop Wicked, we'll come back for you.
We'll see about that, Hans murmured. We'll see about a lot of things.
Hans turned and walked back to his position by the wall. Thomas was sure that the man carried around many dark memories in his mind.
What next? Brenda asked.
Thomas knew they didn't have time to rest, and his mind was set on what they needed to do.
We find our friends, convince them to join us. Then we go back to Galley. The only thing I've accomplished in life is to help set up an experiment that failed and tormented a bunch of kids. It's time to add something else to that list. We're going to stop the entire operation before they do it to new immunes all over again.
Jorge spoke for the first time in a while.
We? What are you saying, Hermano?
Thomas shifted his gaze to the man, his resolve solidifying.
We have to help the right arm.
No one said anything.
Okay,
Minho finally said.
But first, let's get something to eat.
Chapter 29. They went to a coffee shop nearby, recommended by Hans and his wife. Thomas had never been in such a place before. At least, not that he remembered. Customers lined up at the counter, getting coffee and pastries, then heading for a table or back out the door. He watched as a nervous older woman kept lifting her surgical mask to sip her hot drink. One of those red-shirted guards stood at the door, randomly testing people for the flare with his handheld device every couple of minutes or so. An odd metal apparatus covered his own mouth and nose. Thomas sat with Minho and Brenda at a table in the back corner while Jorge went to get food and drinks. Thomas's eyes kept coming back to a man, maybe 35 or 40 years old, who sat at a nearby bench in front of a large window onto the street. He hadn't touched his coffee since Thomas and his friends had arrived, and steam no longer rose from the cup. The man just hunched over, elbows on knees, hands loosely clasped, staring at a spot on the other side of the shop. There was something disturbing about the look on his face. Blank. His eyes were almost floating in their sockets, and yet there was a hint of pleasure there. When Thomas pointed it out to Brenda, she whispered that the guy was probably on the Bliss and would be jailed if he got caught. It gave Thomas the willies. He hoped the man would leave soon. Jorge returned with sandwiches and steaming cups of coffee, and the four of them ate and drank in silence. Thomas knew they all realized the urgency of their situation, but he was grateful to rest and get some strength back. They finished up and were getting ready to leave, but Brenda remained in her seat. "Would you guys mind waiting outside for a few minutes?" she asked. Her look made it obvious that she meant Jorge and Minho. "Excuse me?" Minho responded, his tone exasperated. "More secrets?" "No, nothing like that, I promise. I just need a moment. I want to tell Thomas something." Thomas was surprised but curious. He sat back down. "Just go," he said, addressing Minho. "You know I won't keep anything from you, and she knows it too." His friend grumbled but finally went with Jorge, and the two of them stood out on the sidewalk near the closest window. Minho flashed Thomas a goofy grin and waved, his sarcasm making it obvious he wasn't exactly happy. Thomas waved back, then focused on Brenda. "So, what's this all about?" he asked. "I know we need to hurry, so I'll be really quick. We haven't had time to be alone, and I just want to make sure you know that what happened in the Scorch wasn't an act. I was there on a job, I was there to help things play out, but I did grow close to you, and it did change me. And there are a few things I think you deserve to know. About me, about Chancellor Page, about—" Thomas held his hand up to cut her off. "Please, just stop." She pulled back, a look of surprise on her face. "What? Why?" "I don't want to know anything. Not one more thing. All I care about is what we're going to do from here out, not stuff about my past or yours or Wicked's. Nothing. And we need to move." "But—" "No, Brenda, I mean it. We're here, and we have a goal, and that's all we need to focus on. No more talking." She held his gaze without saying anything, then looked down at her hands resting on the table. "Then all I'll say is I know you're doing the right thing, going in the right direction, and I'll keep helping as best I can." Thomas hoped he hadn't hurt her feelings, but he meant what he'd said. It was time to let go, even though she was obviously itching to tell him something. As he searched for a response, his eyes wandered back to the odd man on the bench. He'd pulled something Thomas couldn't see out of his pocket and was pressing it against the crook of his right elbow. He closed his eyes in a long blink, looking a little dazed when they opened again. His head slowly drifted backward until it rested on the window. The red-shirted flare tester stepped into the cafe, and Thomas leaned over to get a better look. Redshirt walked toward the bench where the drugged-out man was still resting peacefully. A short woman moved along next to the tester, whispering into his ear and fidgeting nervously. "Thomas?" Brenda asked. He put a finger to his lip.